WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting into summer. Got a real pennant race going on around here, and I'm doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have these 50th anniversary scratch-offs we're giving away. I'm going to be giving away the 3-7 sometime later on in the month. We were at the local last week. We had Fancy Clancy Haskett on the program talking about pouring beer since 1974. Our friends at Window Nation also putting it on the road, 866-90-NATION. Do what I did last summer. Get yourself some new windows. You save some money on that AC and all of the energy costs here coming up this summer. This guy hasn't been on in a little while. I don't know that it's been a long time since he and I have talked about relevant baseball. He, along with Marty Conway and some of my other folks, has been the Masson insider to peel back the onion of the Angelos Lerner wars. We have since seen his former Nationals as a longtime Washington Times sports writer win a World Series. And now we're in regional sports network hell where my Padres don't even come on the television. Eric Fisher joins us for the first time in a long time. He has made a vocational move, longtime Sports Business Journal, and then at Sport Business, now doing things independently and has a new outfit he's going to tell us all about. Dude, it's so good to have you on, but the best part of this, as a Camden Yards veteran, and I know you are, and you spent many years supporting the Orioles and being up here covering it with the Times and all that before there were Nationals, we have a relevant baseball team here, and this city has a different heartbeat about it when the baseball team's good, and I know you know that.
Yeah, they're fun. They're likable. These are good guys by and large, and it's a fun team. You know, this Orioles franchise obviously has got a real historical lineage going back to the Cal days and, you know, Brooks and Frank and all of that. You know, great legacy, great history. And, you know, I'm not saying we're necessarily going to be right back there, World Series titles this year or next year, but like they are a relevant team again, and they're going to be, and again, these are good young guys. This is a team that's going to be reckoned with. Even if they're not championship this year, next year, they're going to be, you're going to have to reckon with the Orioles for at least a good half decade now.
This is a new baseball cycle that we've grown into since we traded our baseball cards at the turn of the century, right? Like you stink and then you draft and hope you draft well. Then you get good for a little bit, and then you have to manage it again, right? So the Orioles doing this with $55 million. How much money will be there? How many fans come back? What the Masson train wreck turns out to be? What they have to pay the Lerners to go away? Who owns the team 5 years from now? Like, they don't have a lease. Dude, they don't have a lease. Like, so all of these things being said, I am just praying that they don't screw this up. That, you know, the Orioles' best player right now should be Manny Machado under contract and be a venerable guy here. They didn't want any of that. They weren't a part of any of that. Now, that's for better or for worse for the Padres. They did play a lot of baseball last fall, as I remember it. But for this group, to see Rutschman, to see all these young players, Mullins now with the injury, but to see all these guys and realize the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Dodgers, they're all looming, ready to pay them and pay Shohei Ohtani or anybody else once it gets to that point that these guys' careers get pregnant with possibility. And I have no idea how they're going to manage it or even how they should manage it. But this is the next problem. People come up to me and saying, well, I hope the Orioles don't get in that situation the Ravens got into with Lamar. And I'm thinking, that's the next problem is – can you build something and can you keep it sustainable when you get as lucky as they've gotten at picking good baseball players, I should say, with Adley Rutschman?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things in there, but you are correct. This core is all, for the most part, pre-arbitration, pre-free agency, and they're sort of playing above their market value, and that's sort of the nature of the construct of basic player salaries, that you have these good young players that are sort of playing above their value in those initial phases of their career. This is essentially year after year how the Rays have been able to sustain a contender, is to get people playing above their sort of strict market value, so to speak.
And never paying them. In their case, that's been their model. I mean, I hope that's not the Orioles' model. That was the A's model. Look at them.
Right. By the time we get to the potential wash, rinse, repeat portion of this cycle for the Orioles, when the big bills start coming due, ideally, we'll have a better sense of the entire landscape economically of Major League Baseball. We've got big questions, as you alluded to in your opener, about the entire macro landscape for RSNs, what's going to happen with the ownership of one, maybe both teams in the capital region, what's going to happen with the stadium lease, you know, what's going to happen with Rob Manfred's next contract, et cetera. There's a lot of big questions out there. And by the time, again, when the big bills come due in 3 to 5 years on this core, ideally a lot of that will be clarified in a way that those questions can be answered in the form of market value contract tenders.
It's never going to get level playing field, though, dude. You and I have been chasing that. I've been on here 31 years. I mean, I remember when the Orioles were the spenders. They were the ones buying Alomar and in that era when the Blue Jays and them had money and the Yankees didn't have a stadium and the Red Sox were the ghost of the curse of the Bambino. Like I go back that far and the game's changed so much. But this is the window for the Orioles to say, what are we going to be? And I would take it even further in saying I was there 10 years ago. It feels like 10 years ago. I guess it was 9 years ago now. The Royals thing. And you were in the press box too out there. I remember seeing you there. Yep. And the Royals were back and everybody's in powder blue, like my Coons Ford shirt here. Right. And they were all wearing George Brett jerseys and Moustakas. And these guys, I don't even remember their names anymore. Right. They're gone, long gone. Everything there is gone. Whatever they built is over with. Nobody goes to the game. Like all of that, man, it's like a blink and it happens for Matt Wieters is here. He's gone. Nick Markakis is here. He's gone. Brian Roberts is here. He's gone. Adam Jones. Look, he's young. He's gone. He's in Japan. And it really does happen that fast, but then the franchise stays behind. And whether there's real fans, real money, real sponsorship, a real, you know, what the Cardinals have where they're just always in it, what the Braves have managed to do by moving their stadium, that it feels like they have money to keep players, spend and be a part of the mix of Major League Baseball, not what the Royals have been or the A's, which is we'll try for a couple years and then we're going to go to the cellar and we're going to bottom fish. The Astros did it, bottom fish for years, not have television ratings and just tank our franchise in the hopes to build it back up. I mean, that's been a pretty workable model for a lot of these owners.
Yeah, on the Orioles' best day, they're still essentially going to be the fourth banana economically in that division. The Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays pretty much always going to have more revenue opportunities.
Man, that's a bitter pill, isn't it? I mean, you just really splash like poop on it, like literally. Like that's just the fact, right? Like really.
But having said all of that, you referenced the Braves. The Braves, in a lot of ways, are essentially the model franchise in the entire league right now in terms of their building, how they win, how they conduct their business. There's a lot of good things happening in Atlanta, and you could make a very similar case that, you know, the Mets, they've got the biggest payroll in the league. You've got the Phillies out there. You've got, you know, Washington that, you know, again, is a bigger market and should be, you know, rolling in bigger than what Atlanta is doing, but Atlanta just keeps doing it. And a lot of what they've done is locking up those guys on long-term contracts before they hit their final arbitration and free agency years. And so there's a whole other discussion to have on that. And there's a big sort of push pull and, you know, there are folks, you know, within the agent community and the union committee who are not in favor of those kind of deals because players don't necessarily have a chance to go to full free agency and maximize their potential value. But from the other side of the coin, Atlanta has built a sustained winner making a lot of those deals. That could be a pathway for the Orioles long-term that, you know, instead of waiting for the big bill to come that I was referencing before, maybe in a year or two that you sort of, okay, these are real guys that we want around for 5, 7, 8 years, whatever it is, and start making those contract offers sooner rather than later.
Eric Fisher's our guest. No one knows more about the business. Certainly baseball and sports has covered it for a long, long time in a lot of ways. You started the conversation as you're always the smartest guy in the room, but you started with RSNs and you said, all right, let's start with that. I've already kicked the Padres in the groin to begin with. I've been kicking the Angelos Lerner relationship that was approved by, you know, was a Bob DePay 17 years ago, and it's still not organized in any way, 18 years ago, still not organized. And you and I have had volumes of debate on that all these years. But at its core, when you talk about the macro model and how They're going to generate revenue. I see they're asking Padres fans for $19.95 now, like direct to your television screen. Eric, my wife and I got food two Fridays ago, and we came in here looking for the baseball game when the Orioles were winning. They were, you know, like, and we couldn't find the game, and Apple Plus won on my credit card, and I gave them the middle finger, and I'm like, and we didn't watch the game. And so I don't know what they're doing, and I haven't paid attention to most of it, but until it affects you and your team's in a pennant race and you're like, I want to watch the game. And you're like, I remember Super TV here where you had to have a toaster oven, you know, to get the channel and a special antenna you put on your roof in the late 70s and early 80s. They should be making this easier. It should be easy for old people, young people to get games. And the whole model was so screwy and to the advantage of Angelo's family, right? I mean, they're the ones that made all the money on this, and wherever the Yes Network and Nesson was with all that money, that feels over. I mean, the court, you know, we've been predicting this for 10 years. It feels over, but what is the next thing? Do they even know what they're doing?
It, really trying to chase a moving target here. The entire pay TV ecosystem is being redefined now in real time. That you essentially, you've got the cord cutting that you've alluded to, and because of this massive amount of cord cutting and dispersion of consumers into all various different kinds of platforms, trying to aggregate those audiences and put games on any particular platform is more difficult than ever. And it's sort of at the basis of why Diamond Sports Group, which is the parent of Bally Sports, it has the rights to 14 other MLB clubs, not the Orioles, but 14 others. They're bankrupt right now. And as we're taping this, there is a court hearing going on, and Diamond is trying to reduce the fees to four clubs, saying that doesn't comport with market realities right now. There's a fifth, San Diego, that you referenced, that they basically just said, we're not paying you. And so MLB took that opportunity to seize the rights back, and they're now distributing the games, trying to figure out how to not only get the games out, but recreate that economic, those sort of solid economics. The Padres getting $60 million a year for Diamond, and all of this sort of patchwork that they've sort of built up just to at least get the games out. That's great. They're serving the fans, but then how do you sort of get that $60 million back? Nobody knows the answer to that question, whether it be in this near-term solution or even a long-term solution, how you reconstruct that model. Again, it's chasing a moving target.
I felt like these people have been stealing money for a long, long time from little grandmothers that off the cable bill that wouldn't care about baseball, people that would never watch baseball, don't even know where the channel is. Half the time you get Mass in one, Eric, and the Nationals are on. So if you're in a hospital or a hotel room where you only get one channel, you don't even get the other. You don't get the Orioles in places. And now we want the Orioles. So, like, you know, it's become all the out-of-market issues that Luke Jones, who covers the team for me, lives 20 minutes from where I'm sitting in Shrewsbury, Pennsylvania, and can't, because he's in Pennsylvania, they want to give him Phillies games, right? So it's a mess, but the mafia they've had to get money from people that aren't fans at, you know, $35 a year or whatever it is, and now having to go out to their actual fans, the only the people who want to pay for it, and see what they're willing to pay. How much am I and my wife willing to pay tonight to have the game on television tonight for the season ticket, whatever, where they're going to bill me directly? And I, Eric, keep thinking about, I'm a business guy, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm thinking, if I were John Angelos, what would my big idea be? Well, let's start with this. The people that are coming to the ballpark and buying season tickets, why wouldn't you just add it on to their thing that they get the game, you know, buy the 26-game plan and we'll give you the games on TV for free, right? You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some model where they build that in. Because if the new model is they stop stealing money from my mother and my neighbors who don't care about baseball, and they get on my block alone thousands of dollars every year for the cable bill and have for a generation for people that may or may not want Oriole baseball or may or may not want Masson, if they're just trying to swim from customers and P1 customers, customers that want to be there 162 nights a year and pay for it, that's a little different than buying the NFL ticket for Sundays. And the affinity level you have for your team to stay with it and to pay for it, and how many of those fans are really willing to do that for the Miami Marlins or for the Tampa Rays, for these teams that are moribund in regard to their brand. Oh my God. Like you say, how do they get the $60 million back? They're not. And they better figure something else, some other way to make money.
Yeah, and we've seen some interesting experiments on some of the things you're talking about. A couple of the NBA teams have bundled in local streaming access with a season ticket. I think those things are sort of smaller solutions on the margin. But writ large, your point is well taken that for literally decades, part of the economic model was deriving revenue from people who were not consuming the product. Now you have to get revenue, whether it be linear or streaming.
Think about how sleazy that is, just in a general sense, to say they were getting a lot of their revenue from people that just weren't using it, didn't even know it existed, and they were paying for it.
Well, that's not just sports, though. That's a lot of cable companies.
Understood. I never watched the Home Garden Network, but I'm sure they made $3.
That was the entire ecosystem. So now all of these people, sports and non-sports, are really having to get revenue from people who are specifically consuming their product. And again, you combine that with the cord cutting. Again, really hard to aggregate audiences now.
Where are you with the rest of sports? Is sports healthy? It feels healthy some days here for sure in Baltimore with the Orioles and the Ravens, and now the Orioles are back. But like the Preakness just blew through here and the horse racing industry. And then I watch all of you sexy folks do that F1 thing that it hasn't gotten to me yet, but people dig it. And then I see the NBA and the NHL with sort of weird markets involved. Now, the NBA is just a different animal because it's so global. But I'm thinking like a Miami-Vegas hockey tournament where the games aren't on TV. Speaking of how the mighty have fallen, I mean, the hockey game's hard to – if I want to watch the Stanley Cup Finals, I have to have a secret code in order to figure out how to do it. Like, it feels to me like sports is – trying to figure itself out. I mean, the NIL in colleges is a disaster. Like, there is a massive thing going on here with COVID and the aftermath and revenue that has been promised out. And now how are we going to find the money?
Yeah, and I would say, again, there's still a bit of a sort of resettling that's occurring, and the COVID effects that you referenced are a very good point. But I would say, to answer your original question, at the top of the pyramid, your big events, Super Bowl, NBA Finals, NCAA tournament, a lot of those are just as good as they ever were. Numbers have been, just as good as they ever were, and there's a lot of health there. Sort of at your lower tiers, it's much harder, and you're hearing things about staff cutbacks and everything. We just had a bit yesterday when the XFL, now the third version of the XFL, is cutting staff, and it already feels like the beginning of the end of the third go round on this. And a lot of these smaller entities, it's a lot tougher.
Eric Fisher's here. Tell us about your entity. You've moved around a little bit. Yes. And taken a down semester, but nobody's covered the business of sports longer and better than you. And I know you're bringing that to where you are. And to our point, as we sit here, and we haven't even mentioned the A's move. Like, there's just things happening. Yep. That's just baseball. I mean, this guy doesn't have a lease here, and you're trying and still fighting with the Nationals. I mean, the business of sports still percolates at just an incredible level for interest, like people like you and me that think it's as foundational as the standings or the batting averages.
Yeah, so I've got a super new opportunity that I'm really excited about, that I've just joined Front Office Sports. This is another outlet that covers the business of sports, more in a consumer-facing direction than some of my prior stops in my career path. But this is a company that I've admired for a long time from afar. I'm now part of the team, and I'm now working on, they've got a twice daily email newsletter that it's already a great product, and we're already working on some new things to take that to even bigger and better places. And so just super excited with being part of this company and where it's going.
I had you on a half an hour, and I don't think we said anything about N, F, and L. And the Lamarathon here sucked all the oxygen out of spring training, out of the offseason. And you talk about the business of the NFL, where $52 million quarterbacks are now existing. And the NFL, I don't know that it takes any downtime, but it feels like at least for a couple of weeks around here, baseball has become so significant that the Ravens have moved below the fold on page one a little bit. And that's an interesting thing, because that's very hard to do, to move the NFL off the top of the fold, right?
Yeah, we're in the 6 week span. This is literally the quietest 6 weeks of the entire year between the schedule release and the beginning of training camp. This is it. This is when all the people who work at these teams, this is when they get their vacation. This is lake time. This is beach time, whatever you want to call it. This is the only quiet period of the entire year. The schedule is out. Everybody's made their plans for the fall and winter. It's training camp will start pretty soon here. And once we get into July, and then it's go time again on the way, all the way into next spring. So this is enjoy the silence, I guess, in a relative sense, because, for 46 weeks out of the 52, the NFL will dominate, and that next go-round is coming quick.
Were you amused by the Lamar and Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes that went on? I mean, it was quite an offseason, right? And then the Eagles come and give all the money to Hurts, and that kind of changes things for Lamar. It's been fascinating. Even with the Ravens and the way they do business, spending big money on Odell Beckham, I mean, it's been something around here. Sports has been relevant around here in Baltimore.
Yeah, although, again, there's a little bit of a question out there because the Bengals are still the Bengals, and that team is loaded. And I'll sort of show my bias growing up a Steeler fan. That team has come around in a big way. They're going to make a jump this year. And so my point is that division is really tough. There's a case to be made that even though Cleveland's still Cleveland, but there is a case to be made top to bottom, perhaps the best division in the league.
Well, you said Joe Burrow, and that'll be the next contract situation, right? Like, that's where – and you've seen the Bengals. Their brand has exploded the last 36 months in the way that the Ravens did here.
You remember Jerry Jones yelling at Mike Brown to actually monetize his franchise. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, and they have the white this and the jerseys and fans and, like, all of that's happening. But you still equate them to the Angelos family, and you say – you know, the Orioles couldn't figure out Messina. They couldn't figure out Machado. Are the Bengals really going to figure out Joe Burrow? And the one thing we know is there's enough money there to pay him. It's not that they can't afford it. I mean, I think there were times where that family literally felt like they had no money and operated in that way as poor people. The Burrow thing, that really is the litmus test for the whole franchise, right? Is whether they get him done or not.
Yeah, although there's really no reason not to, because again, he's a proven winner, went to one Super Bowl, almost got to another, still a very young man. He's got a great career ahead of him. And the NFL just prints money. I mean, keep in mind that we're just now beginning $110 billion worth of contracts, of which they get, obviously, their 1/32nd share. And you know, that's before you do anything else, and greater internationalization and new betting contracts. And, you know, we can go, you know, new Sunday ticket. We can go through the revenue lines. There is money there. So it's really just a matter of will.
I love when you go through the revenue lines. Eric Fisher is here, attorney, journalist, and covering all things sports business. You can follow him. He's got a new Twitter handle, A Eric Fisher. That's A, the letter E-R-I-C-F-I-S. H-E-R. He's up in Jersey and at F-O-S. So if you want to find him, Front Office Sports, the business of sports, I just gave it a follow at F-O-S. So you can do that too. Eric, always good to chat with you, but even better when the Orioles are good. It's been too long. And at some point, I'm going to call you back and say, Eric, what's going to happen with all this mass and money?
Yeah. Been trying to answer that question for 20 years now. There's a lot of people trying to figure that out.
At some point it'll end, right? At some point John won't own the team. They'll make him sell it. They'll get free the learners from jail. Manfred, to your point, like, he's got this circus fire going on in Oakland and Las Vegas right now. He's trying to keep his job and get re-upped. The day I met you, he got hired down at the Hyatt here in Baltimore. Yeah. Like, there are so many dumpster fires going on that the Masson thing has moved to, you know, way into the back room for a while. It feels like to me.
It's on the agate page, to put it in your reference.
There you go. Scoreboard page, as I called it back in the day at the Evening Sun, compiled by little Nestor Aparicio. Eric Fisher, a good newspaper man, long time at the Washington Times, now up in Jersey doing it right. Give him a follow and follow them out at FOS and Front Office Sports. You can follow me for a crab cake, and I got to get Fisher down here for a crab cake. Last time, I think we had milkshakes and burgers at some Nationals game, but we're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour all over the state. We're doing the Oyster Tour for our 25th anniversary in September. We will be celebrating on August 3rd 25 years here at AM 1570 WNST. We're going to be doing that all day. Costas, then we're going to be at Drug City. I'm taking the show to Dundalk, radio-free Dundalk. It's summertime around here. Big thanks to Goodwill as well for sponsoring our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.